We're reading a very sobering verse and purport from the 30th chapter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is text 34. So I want Ram Roy to do me the favor of leading us in the Sanskrit, because he's a better man than me. Well, let's say a better devotee than me. Here, come this side. Give him the mic, please. I hope it's working.
Vime.
Daya.
Chatma.
Rata.
Atmanamo.
Ti.
Akandita. Kaminam.
Narsayan.
Nainyam. Srinam. Jaiva. Dharatmatam. Vime. Darsayan Dainyam Srinam Chaiva Dharatmatam Vene Taya Chatmarasta Atmanamo Pirkandita Aminam Darsayan Dainyam Srinam Chaiva Dharatmatam
Sukadeva Goswami is picking it up again. We've just heard the gopis' expressions in their lamentation upon seeing the Vipaksha gopis, particularly, who were rivals to Radharani's group, headed by Chandravali. They've just expressed lamentation upon seeing the footprints of Radharani along with Krishna. which in certain respects are the supreme glory of Braja and the glory of the Braja pastimes, is that the footprints of Radha and Krishna are placed practically on every footpath in this holy land. So Shukadeva Goswami continued, Lord Krishna enjoyed with that gopi, although he enjoys only within, being self-satisfied and complete in himself. Thus, by contrast, this is very important. Thus, by contrast, he showed the wretchedness of ordinary lusty men and, hard-hearted woman. Ordinary woman. Please repeat. Sukadeva Goswami continued. Lord Krishna enjoyed with that gopi. Although he enjoys only within. Being self-satisfied and complete in himself. Thus, by contrast, he showed the wretchedness of ordinary lusty men and hard-hearted women. Purport by the disciples, the humble disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Although this is a very nice purport coming up, however, I feel that it's important that we also hear some of Srila Prabhupada's vani regarding some of the topics under discussion, which will, I think, help to shed some light and perhaps bring a sobering perspective to the subject matter. This verse directly refutes the superficial criticism materialistic people sometimes direct against Lord Krishna's pastimes. The philosopher Aristotle claimed that ordinary activities are unworthy of God. And with this in mind, with this idea in mind, some people declare that since the activities of Lord Krishna resemble those of ordinary human beings, he cannot be the absolute truth. But in this verse, Sukadeva Goswami emphatically points out that Lord Krishna acts on the liberated platform of spiritual self-satisfaction. This fact is indicated here by the terms Atmaratha, Atmarama, and Akandita. It is inconceivable to ordinary people that a handsome young boy and a beautiful young girl enjoying romantic conjugal affairs in the forest moonlight can be engaged in pure activity, free from egoistic desire and lust. Yet while Lord Krishna is inconceivable to ordinary persons, those who love him can easily realize the absolute pure nature of his activities. One may argue that beauty is in the eyes of the beholder, and that therefore the devotees of Krishna are only imagining the Lord's activities to be pure. This argument ignores many significant facts. For one, the path of Krishna consciousness, of developing love for Krishna, demands that a devotee strictly follow four regulative principles: no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication, and no eating of meat, fish, or eggs. When one is freed from material lust and rises to the liberated platform beyond material desire, one realizes the absolute beauty of Lord Krishna. This process is not theoretical. It has been practiced and completed by many thousands of great sages who have left us their shining example and their brilliant teachings concerning the path of Krishna consciousness. Certainly, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. However, real beauty is perceived by the soul's eye and not by the lusty eye of the material body. Therefore, the Vedic literature repeatedly stresses that only those free from material desires can see the beauty of Lord Krishna with the eye of the pure soul anointed with love of Godhead. It may finally be noted that upon realizing the pastimes of Lord Krishna, one becomes free of all tinges of sex desire. And, It may finally be noted that upon realizing the pastimes of Lord Krishna, one becomes free of all tinges of sex desire a state of mind that can hardly result from meditating upon material sexual affairs. One final note. The conjugal pastimes of Krishna perfectly round out his qualification as the Supreme Absolute Truth. The Vedanta states that the Absolute Truth is the source of everything, so certainly the Absolute cannot lack any of the beautiful things of this world. It is only because romantic affairs exist in a pure spiritual form in the Absolute that they can manifest in a perverted material form in this world. Thus, the apparent beauty of this world is not to be absolutely rejected. Rather, beauty should be accepted in its pure spiritual form. Since the beginning of time, men and women have been inspired to poetic rapture by the art of romance. Unfortunately, romance in this world usually leads to crushing disappointment, brought about by a change of heart or by death. Thus, although we may at first find romantic affairs beautiful and enjoyable, they are eventually spoiled by the onslaught of material nature. Still, it is unreasonable to totally reject the concept of romance. Rather, we should accept conjugal attraction in its absolute perfect pure form as it exists within God, without a tinge of material lust or selfishness. That pure conjugal attraction, the supreme beauty and pleasure of the supreme truth, is what we are reading about here in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Kananjana Shalakaya Chakshuva Malitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vanchikalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyevcha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Shri Advaita Garadha Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Ram Ram Hare Hare. So I want to make one little point about this purport. In this last paragraph, although we can understand what is intended by our commentator, if you will casually read this, perhaps without much insight, you might conclude that the romantic affairs found in this world are beautiful and enjoyable. The only problem is that the time factor is there, death factor is there, and that people have changes of heart. But otherwise, it's a very beautiful and wonderful affair. And one might conclude that if we could simply not have a change of heart, and if we can learn to accept the bad with the good, then we would be, let's say, satisfied and happy by involving ourselves with the mundane romance, being that it is otherwise a very beautiful thing, without taking into consideration that mundane romance is putrid, rotten, stale, pale, and you could say disgusting in every respect, through and through, from beginning to end. There's no question of anything beautiful or wonderful about the mundane romance. The birds and the bees, they are also engaged in various animals, practically in every species of life. You will see that the sexual impulse is there. And that sexual impulse, at the very onset, is an expression of the desire of the conditioned soul to imitate God as the enjoyer or the Purusha. So in no way should we think that the sexual affairs of men and women of this world has any standing From the perspective of the true vantage point of transcendental realization or pure Krishna consciousness, sexual intercourse on the spiritual platform is what could be called as ananya bhak. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives a nice, analysis of that sloka in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, bhajate mam ananya bhak. That apichets sudaracharo bhajate mam ananya bhak. So he's saying that actually it is the gopis who are firmly determined to serve Krishna, although they apparently engage in what ordinary people would deem to be mundane, lusty activities. Jai Sri Sinitai Gaurare Sham Sri Sri Krishna Balaram Ki Jai. Although the gopis apparently engage in lusty affairs, breaking all the rules and regulations of the Varnashram Dharma and social order, acceptable social standards, etc., it is to be understood that in fact they are fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, because they have this ananya bhak, or this one-pointed determination to serve Krishna, therefore they are certainly sadhus. They're sadhus. Who is having the one-pointed determination to serve Krishna is actually sadhu. And the gopis are the shining example of this principle. If someone is engaged in material lusty activities and then claiming to be a devotee, then it may be, questionable as to the degree or the extent of his ananya bhak or her ananya bhak in the matter of serving Krishna. Although Baladev Vidyabhushan does say that because within the heart there is a determination to at long last achieve the lotus feet of Krishna, even if there are occasional slip-ups on the path, one may still be considered sadhu in spite of, you know, temporary setbacks. But the fact of the matter is that one, even if there are accidental fall downs, it will be seen that he is not habitually addicted to, resorting to material gratifications in the course of his endeavor to advance in Krishna consciousness. So anyway, it's important for us to understand that why it is that these activities of Krishna and the gopis have been displayed before us in the pages of the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The actual purpose is to allow us to have an opportunity to have something to compare this mundane material gratificatory lusty activities or sexual life of this material world with. If we don't have something to compare it with, we may not be able to see the distinction between the mundane and the transcendentally situated adiras of the spiritual world, because the adiras is all perfect and complete and powerful in the matter of purifying the existence of the soul contaminated by material lust. It is understood that these activities on the spiritual platform between Krishna and the gopis are perfect and beautiful, and in comparison, the other activities, which are considered to be only a perverted reflection, are of a reprehensible nature or blameworthy nature. So it's important that devotees have the opportunity to acquaint themselves with the beauty of the transcendental adiras of the spiritual world, so that they can actually see the distinction between the mundane activities and the spiritually satisfying activities in Krishna consciousness. Also, I have a few things that we can read with this in this regard. Prabhupada Chaitanya Charitamrita writes, I've read this before, but because it's appropriate for this in this discussion, I think it's good enough to drag out this purport again. One who has not been attracted by the transcendental beauty of rasa will certainly be dragged down into material attraction, thus to act in material contamination and progress to the darkest region of hellish life. But by understanding the conjugal love of Radha and Krishna, one is freed from the grip of attraction to so-called love between man and woman. Similarly, one who understands the pure parental love of Nanda and Yasoda for Krishna will be saved from being dragged into material parental affection. If one accepts Krishna as the supreme friend, the attraction of material friendship will be finished for him, and he will not be dismayed by so-called friendship with mundane wranglers. If he is attracted by servitorship to Krishna, he will no longer have to serve the material body in the degraded status of material existence with the false hope of becoming master in the future. Similarly, one who sees the greatness of Krishna in neutrality will certainly never again seek the so-called belief of impersonalist or voidist philosophy. If one is not attracted by the transcendental nature of Krishna, one is sure to be attracted by material enjoyment, thus to become implicated in the clinging network of virtuous and sinful activities, and to continue material existence by transmigrating from one material body to another. Only in Krishna consciousness can one achieve the highest perfection of life. A devotee, therefore, must be attracted by the trees, by the behavior of the inhabitants of Vrindavan who live in a direct relationship with Krishna. The land, water, cows, trees, and flowers serve Krishna in Shantaras. Krishna's servants serve Krishna in the Dasyaras, and Krishna's cowherd friends serve him in Sakyaras. Similarly, the elderly gopis and gopas serve Krishna as father and mother, uncles, and other relatives, and the gopis, the young girls, serve Krishna in conjugal love. While executing devotional service, one must be naturally inclined to serve Krishna in one of these transcendental relationships. That is the actual success of life. So it's important here, we can see how Prabhupada is prompting us that we must be attracted to serve Krishna in one of these transcendental relationships. That we must be attracted, attracted by the behavior of the inhabitants of Vrindavan who live in a direct relationship with Krishna. It's not only our duty, but it's our very, let's say, the very life of our life, the very soul of our soul, the very intrinsic capacity of the soul to be attracted to the realm of Braja and to be attracted to the to Krishna's leelas in Braja and his dealings with his various devotees in the land of Braja. In Krishna Samhita, Sri Krishna Samhita, Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes a nice point here, which I think is important for all devotees to hear, so as to clear some possible doubts about the goal of our bhajan. How can those whose hearts have been polluted by social prestige attain Krishna? The wicked pride of this material world has six causes, namely birth, beauty, qualities, knowledge, opulence, and strength. People who are overwhelmed with these six kinds of pride cannot take to the devotional service of the Lord. We are experiencing this every day in our life. Persons who are polluted by the pride of knowledge consider the science of Krishna very insignificant, while considering the goal of life, Such people regard the happiness of Brahman to be superior to the happiness of devotional service. Persons who are devoid of pride attain the mood of gopas and gopis to enjoy with Krishna. The gopas and gopis are the authorities in the science of Krishna. The reason for using the word gopi in this verse is that in this book we are discussing the topmost rasa of conjugal love. Persons who are situated in Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, and Vatsalya ras are also in the mood of Braja, and they realize the transcendental mellows in relationship with Krishna according to their respective moods. We are not going to elaborate on them in this book. Now listen to this. Actually, all living entities are eligible for the mood of Braja. When one's heart is filled with the mood of Madhurya, he attains Braja in full perfection. So this is an important point that should be brought out a little bit with regard to what relationship we have with the discussions about the Braja Leelas in the Srimad Bhagavatam. These Braja Leelas in the Srimad Bhagavatam are meant to attract us to another soil. We're like fish out of water. Our original home is Braja, and our natural innate capacity for augmenting the moods of Braja within our own hearts are there in every one of us. It is not that there are some souls who are cut out, so to speak, to become Vaikunthavasis, and some souls are cut out to become as Dwarkavasis or Ayodhyavasis, and some souls are cut out to be Brajbasis. And those souls who are cut out to be Brajbasis are so rare and few and far between that we could hardly hope to see even one, you know, in this world. That's not a fact. According to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says that every living entity has the eligibility, the innate or the inherent adhikar to cultivate the moods of Braja or to augment the moods of Braja. So this indicates that these descriptions of Srimad Bhagavatam, where the gopis are extolled as the topmost devotees of Krishna, that these descriptions are meant for us. They're meant to awaken within us an attraction to the realm of Braja. They're meant to awaken within us an attraction to the Adiras, or the pure spiritual, sexual dalliance between Krishna and his lovers in the spiritual realm. And by doing so, we can very easily overcome attraction to the mundane dim reflection within this world. There are a few other purports, and I know that it's my nature to turn every Bhagavatam class into a seminar, and I beg your forgiveness. But I hope that I don't drag on too much, and I hope this doesn't ruffle anyone's feathers. But it's not meant to ruffle anyone's feathers. It's simply to bring our focus back on to the onto the real goal of our life. I'm going to read now from Kapila Muni's instructions in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because in the verse itself that is under discussion, it is mentioning that by contrast, Krishna's enjoying with the gopis in the Bhoma-lila of Krishna, he revealed. His purpose was to reveal the wretchedness of ordinary lusty men and hard-hearted women. So we should take a look at this a little bit more seriously, so as to understand, how to overcome our, material conditioning. Because after all, no one walks into this Krishna consciousness movement, no one walks through these doors as an already purified soul. We are all, until we come to the absolute stage of perfection, every one of us, whether in a male body or a female body, every one of us are to some extent, to one extent or another, still contaminated by the modes of material nature. Until we drop this mortal coil and attain spiritual bodies, we should not be so eager to think that the subject matters regarding the analysis of the conditional consciousness of living entities in this world doesn't apply to us. It should be we should always think to check to see whether the shoe fits. If the shoe fits, wear it. In other words, to the extent we should look within ourselves and see to what extent the principles, when there's discussion about the nature of lusty men, the nature of of hard-hearted women, you know, I know these are sensitive issues. But we're going to speak about them anyway because, you know, it's not so sensitive that we shouldn't discuss them. You know, it's necessary to actually to take a good look at you can say, our material roots in order to have a better scope for cutting down the labyrinth of the, let's say, banyan tree of material existence with the sword of knowledge, so that we can actually make some tangible progress in our devotional service. One should not associate with a coarse fool who is bereft of the knowledge of self-realization and who is no more than a dancing dog in the hands of a woman. This is talking about, you know, lusty men, okay? One should not associate with a coarse fool who is bereft of the knowledge of self-realization and who is no more than a dancing dog in the hands of a woman. Purport. These are Srila Prabhupada's translations and purports now. So we can derive some shakti from Srila Prabhupada directly at this point. The restriction of association with such foolish persons is especially meant for those who are in the line of advancement in Krishna consciousness. Advancement in Krishna consciousness involves developing the qualities of truthfulness, cleanliness, mercy, gravity, intelligence in spiritual knowledge, simplicity, material opulence, fame, forgiveness, and control of the mind and senses. All these qualities are to be manifested with the progress of Krishna consciousness. It's interesting, he's saying material opulence. Because in other places, Prabhupada has described that that which appears to be material opulence, if it is engaged by a devotee in the service of Krishna, then it is not actually material, but is rather a spiritual opulence. But if one associates with a sudra, a foolish person who is like a dancing dog in the hands of a woman, then he cannot make any progress. Lord Chaitanya has advised that any person who is engaged in Krishna consciousness and who desires to pass beyond material nescience must not associate himself with women, or with persons interested in material enjoyment. For a person seeking advancement in Krishna consciousness, such association is more dangerous than suicide. The infatuation and bondage which accrue to a man from attachment to any other object is not as complete as that resulting from attachment to a woman or to the fellowship of men who are fond of women. Attachment to women is so contaminating, this is the purport, attachment to women is so contaminating that one becomes attached to the condition of to the condition of material life not only by the association of women, but by the contaminated association of persons who are too attached to them. There are many reasons for our conditional life in the material world, but the topmost of all such causes is the association of women, as will be confirmed in the following stanzas. In Kali Yuga, association with women is very strong. In every step of life, there is association with women. If a person goes to purchase something, the advertisements are full of pictures of women. The psychological attraction for women is very great, and therefore people are very slack in spiritual understanding. The Vedic civilization, being based on spiritual understanding, arranges association with women very cautiously. Out of the four social divisions, the members of the first order, namely Brahmacharya, and the third order, Vanaprastha, and the fourth order, Sannyas, are strictly prohibited from female association. Only in the order, in one order, the householder is there licensed to mix with women under restricted conditions. In other words, attraction for woman's association is the cause of the material conditional life, and anyone interested in being freed from this conditional life must detach himself from the association of women. So this is, there's some very interesting, statements by Lord Kapila. And I'm reading now from text 36. So, by text 41, he will show the converse effect of the association of women. In other words, or the attraction, of women. by showing how it is, because here we're saying, Prabhupada is telling that this attraction for woman's association is the cause of material conditional life. So someone might think that, well, that sounds like a plausible statement from the perspective of a man, but what about, you know, the woman? How it is that the woman of this world can be considered to be, let's say, that their material conditional life could be attraction of the for the association of woman. So this is answered very nicely in the 41st verse, where he says, a living entity who, as a result of attachment to a woman, in other words, a living entity, as a result of his attachment to a woman in his previous life, has been endowed with the form of a woman in the present life. In other words, there's a reason why certain living entities are having these hulking physical bodies in the forms of men, and others are having the hulking physical bodies in the forms of women. In any case, form of man or form of woman, both hulking physical bodies are basically stool bags, which are meant to, confine us in this world of birth and death. So we should not be, enchanted by the physical stool bags of each other's bodies, but rather, as Prabhupada will be pointing out in this, in a couple subsequent purports that I will read, that we should be, enchanted by the beauty of Krishna. And if we if we allow ourselves to be attracted or enchanted by the beauty of Krishna, then it's possible for anyone, regardless of whichever confinement he or she is presently, subjected to, can be terminated. (Clears throat) Kapila Muni continues, just try to understand the mighty strength of my Maya. Kapila Muni is Krishna himself, so Vishnu Tattva, an expansion of Krishna. So he's saying my Maya, and he's trying to enlighten us about the attraction, or the futility of attraction to the mayic forms of this world. Just try to understand the mighty strength of my Maya in the shape of woman, who by the mere movement of her eyebrows can keep even the greatest conquerors of the world under her grip. Srila Prabhupada's purport. There are many instances in the history of the world of great conquerors being captivated by the charms of a Cleopatra. One has to study the captivating potency of woman and man's attraction for that potency. From what source was this generated? According to Vedanta Sutra, we can understand that everything is generated from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is enunciated there, Janmad Yasya Yataha. This means that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or the Supreme Person, Brahman, the Absolute Truth, is the source from whom everything emanates. The captivating power of woman and man's susceptibility to such attraction must also exist in the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the spiritual world and must be represented in the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. The Lord is the Supreme Person, the Supreme Male, Param Purush. As a common male wants to be attracted by a female, that propensity similarly exists in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He also wants to be attracted by the beautiful features of a woman. Now the question is, if he wants to be captivated by such womanly attraction, would he be attracted by any material woman? It is not possible. Even persons who are in this material existence can give up womanly attraction if they are attracted by the Supreme Brahman. Such was the case with Haridas Thakur. A beautiful prostitute tried to attract him in the dead of night, but since he was situated in devotional service in transcendental love of Godhead, Haridas Thakur was not captivated. Rather, he turned the prostitute into a great devotee by his transcendental association. This material attraction, therefore, certainly cannot attract the Supreme Lord. When he wants to be attracted by a woman, he has to create such a woman from his own energy. That woman is Radharani. It is explained by the Goswamis that Radharani is the manifestation of the pleasure potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When the Supreme Lord wants to derive transcendental pleasure, he has to create a woman from his internal potency. Thus, the tendency to be attracted by womanly beauty is natural because it exists in the spiritual world. In this material world, it is reflected pervertedly, and therefore there are so many inebrieties. Is that how you pronounce it? Inebrieties? Inebriety? How is it pronounced? Anyone? Huh? Who's an English scholar? Okay, anyhow. Instead of being attracted by material beauty, if one is accustomed to be attracted by the beauty of Radharani and Krishna, then the statement of Bhagavad Gita, Param Drishva Nivartate, holds true. When one is attracted by the beauty, the transcendental beauty of Radha and Krishna, he is no longer attracted by material feminine beauty. That is the special significance of Radha Krishna worship. that is testified to by Yamunacharya. Let's read that again. When one is attracted by the transcendental beauty of Radha and Krishna, he is no longer attracted by material feminine beauty. That is the special significance of Radha Krishna worship. That is testified to by Yamunacharya. He says, quote, since I have become attracted by the beauty of Radha and Krishna, when there is attraction for a woman or a memory of sex life with a woman, I at once spit on it and my face turns in disgust. When we are attracted by Madan Mohan and the beauty of Krishna and his consorts, then the shackles of conditional life, namely the beauty of the material woman, cannot attract us. So one small side point here, that Vedic culture is set up in such a way that accommodates the needs of all living entities. Especially in human society, because human life is a life of responsibility, Vedic culture is set up so as to facilitate the progress of the conditioned soul out of material entanglement to the spiritual platform. It is described in subsequent purports. I don't know how many purports I'm going to have time to read, because I'm trying to do you, Prabhus, a favor and not extend the class or overextend the class too long. But the Vedic culture is set up so as to basically, because we've just heard how it is that the greatest cause of material entanglement is the attraction between man and woman. So it's necessary to understand the logistics of the Vedic setup. If a woman is attracted and attached to the service of her husband, then it is possible for the woman to be upgraded in a future birth, if she is not fully Krishna conscious in this lifetime. If she is fully Krishna conscious in this lifetime, then there's no need to discuss these things. But because we are not all fully Krishna conscious, perhaps there is some need to discuss. However, just as we're going to read in this purport to text 41, that in order to slacken the cause of material bondage, there's necessity for all sections of society to understand the meaning of cooperation in the matter of assisting each other on the path of liberation. There's no question of vimukti or the attainment of the love dalliances with Krishna on the spiritual platform, in the spiritual world, in spiritual bodies, without mukti. Although Mukti is said to be a maidservant of bhakti. Still, it is seen, you can say, that the yardstick by which one can measure progress in devotional service will be how much one is freed from the grip of material attraction. So, sometimes we see that due to material conditional life, or let's say due to the improper upbringing, so to speak, due to material culture or due to the influence of materialistic society, especially in the course of the lives of devotees who were previously, let's say, coming from that condition, that social condition. Many devotees, they took their birth in Vaishnava families, and perhaps these discussions would not so much apply to them. But others, especially those of us who have taken our birth in the families of Malechas and Chandalas, it's hardly expected that our upbringing, you know, was very Krishna conscious, or that we had, let's say, much scope for understanding the intricacies or the logistics of the proper application of Vedic culture in our lives. So sometimes, due to conditional consciousness, because conditional consciousness is based on Icha Dvesha. This Dvesha is based on a kind of envy. Enviousness of the soul toward any other living entity ultimately stems from enviousness toward Krishna. So, it does not behoove a practicing devotee to harbor envy toward any other living entity. However, sometimes it is seen that, you know the saying, misery loves company. It is not that we should be thinking that because we have been shackled by the attraction of woman, either in this life or in previous lifetimes, that we should try to drag others down to our condition of life in order to, say, feel, you can say, justified in our existence. Sometimes it is seen that without much consideration of the needs of others who are trying to become freed from the grip of material attraction, the, let's say, persons who are more conditional in their understanding of the purpose of their lives, even as devotees, or even as aspiring devotees, or even as supposed to be aspiring devotees, as members of this Krishna consciousness movement, there may be a tendency to try to, impede the progress of another soul. Maybe not even consciously, but maybe even subconsciously, because this envy or based on the desire to imitate Krishna may be very deep-rooted in the heart. And so sometimes it is seen that a certain section of society will audaciously try to impose upon another section of society in such a way as to, let's say, flaunt or let's say taunt the other section of society. You can say to purposely test the other section of society. If the woman will become attracted to a man, then of course that is not a very nice thing, because that attraction also perpetuates the wheel of samsara, or the cycle of repeated birth and death. But because it is clearly described by Srila Prabhupada that the body of the man more greatly facilitates the progress on the path of self-realization than the body of the woman. It is to be understood that if the woman will somehow or other, in the course of devotional practices, allow herself to become attracted to the form of a man, then it is not as degrading, because she can be uplifted even materially by such attraction. We're not interested in material upliftment, nor are we really so concerned with material degradation, because what we're really after is we're after the spiritual essence, which is the cause of our progress in devotional service. And that is to focus our consciousness on Krishna. From any standpoint, striyo, vaishyas, tatha, shudras, etc., the papa yonis of this world, if they surrender to Krishna, they can actually make tangible progress in Krishna consciousness and even attain to the position as a vimukta, eternal associate of Krishna in the spiritual world. By taking shelter of Krishna. But taking shelter of Krishna is not such an easy thing. Taking shelter of Krishna is a painstaking affair. Taking shelter of Krishna means to be completely 100% absorbed in Krishna consciousness. If everyone was so 100% absorbed in Krishna consciousness in our Society for Krishna Consciousness, this ISKCON movement, then why is it that such a painful percentage of our sannyasis have fallen down? Why is it that such a painful percentage, I don't know because I don't poke my nose into everybody's affairs, but I've heard so much from many sections of our society that such a painful percentage of our grihastas are engaging in illicit sex with their wives. Why is it? Because according to the instructions of Srila Prabhupada, the sex life, which is to be, let's say, recognized as acceptable standard of behavior in the grihasta ashram, it is only meant for procreation of good children, and it is only meant to be engaged in at certain times of the month when the wife is most fertile. So in this way, it is possible to understand that the devotees, many devotees in this movement, it is very possible for them to be sidetracked to, behavioral standards which are quite substandard to the expectations and the demands of our acharya, Srila Prabhupada. So, If the woman becomes attracted to the man, then materially she may be upgraded. But if a man allows himself to be attracted, or is provoked to be attracted to a woman, then that soul within that body may, in the next life, get a degraded position. Now, someone may argue that, well, why are we saying degraded, elevated and degraded? No one is elevated. Everyone in the material world is degraded. And then from the spiritual perspective, because we're not concerned with bodily affairs, everyone is elevated in certain respects. But we should think that we're elevated to the extent that we're actually absorbed in Krishna consciousness. It is not that simply by wearing tilak and kantimala and, let's say, adorning the dress of the Vaishnavas, that we should be thinking that we are Vaishnavas or Vaishnavis. Only who is chanting the pure name is a Vaishnava. A Shuddha Bhakta is he or she who is chanting the pure name. Those who are on the clearing stage in their chanting, what to speak of those who are on the Aparad Nam platform? They are in the category of Vaishnav Abbas or Chaya Bhakta, a shadow representation of a Bhakta. Vaishnav Abbas is he who chants Nam Abbas. The clearing stage is one of the aspects of Nam Abbas. So who is on the clearing stage is not a Vaishnava. But because he's going in that direction under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master, the scriptures, and the sadhus, the devotee is given the benefit of the doubt. Therefore, he's called as a neophyte devotee, a pure devotee, but in the novice stage. He's not actually pure devotee because he's not chanting the pure name, or she's not chanting the pure name. So, but there's hope for that devotee. He or she is, a candidate for progress in devotional service to the extent that that candidate takes shelter of the instructions of the spiritual master and gives up the riffraff of material association. It is quite possible for there to be material association in the so-called society of devotees. It is not that everyone who comes to this movement is a pure devotee. There are many grades of devotees, and to facilitate the advancement of all the different grades of Vaishnavas, it is essential that we take into consideration what kind of atmospheric conditions are we trying to generate or create or maintenance. These days, maintenance is a big question. How to maintain? Srila Prabhupada said that we cannot maintain without increasing. So there's no question of maintaining spiritual standards without increasing spiritual standards, especially for the leaders of this movement, those who, let's say, are deemed as leaders, rubber stamped as leaders, or who think themselves even as leaders of this movement. We are leader to the extent that we are increasing our standards, our spiritual standards. And we're misleaders to the extent that we're allowing the standards of Vedic culture to become decadent or to become, ignored. So it's an essential point. If I think that I'm a Vaishnava, this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. In Kalyan Kalpataru, he says, if I think that I'm a Vaishnava, I shall look forward to receiving respect from others. So many times we hear a kind of rabble-rousing going on in our society from various quarters that, hey, wait a minute, we're not being respected, you know. But why should we expect respect from others? is in certain respects a sign of our lack of humility. Although we don't want to see that others are disrespected, but we should never, demand respect for ourselves. Our business is to command respect. And we command by respect by our actual, spiritual status, by our actual degrees of advancement, which can be seen by our practical expressions, both vocally and behaviorally, whether we're actually behaving like Vaishnavas and Vaishnavis, whether we're actually, speaking like Vaishnavas and Vaishnavis, whether we're giving, address to, real or self-realized ideas, which are actually meant for the upliftment of the devotees in general and the people in general. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, if I think that I'm a Vaishnava, or we could say Vaishnavi also, isn't it? If I think that I am a Vaishnava, I shall look forward to receiving respect from others. And if the desire for fame and reputation pollutes my heart, I shall certainly go to hell. Then where is the question of my advancement in Krishna consciousness? By giving others the remnants of my food, I shall consider myself superior and shall be burdened with the weight of false pride. Therefore, always remaining your surrendered disciple, I shall not accept worship from anyone else. And furthermore, to regard oneself as a guru of Vaishnavas is an impediment to one's humility. Those who do not listen to the instructions of Shikshastika set forth by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who are forgetful of their actual spiritual identity, who are greedy for the prestige and material gain, and who are thus anxious to obtain the status of a Vaishnava or Guru to satisfy their senses, can never chant the holy name of the Lord. A disciple who has faith in the kirtan, in quotes, performances of such persons, also cannot obtain the qualification for hearing the holy name. This is also from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Sambodhana Bhasya. on Shishastika. So, I don't know whether, I guess it's getting late. And there's many, many nice purports, a few more that would be nice to read. But I don't know whether anyone is anxious to hear anything more. Should I read a little more? What is the consensus? Huh? Okay. A living entity, this is, I'm reading text 41 of this, in the same chapter of Kapila Shiksha. No, I'm gonna read from text 39. Anyway, I'll just read. If you want to leave, I have no objection. I know many of you have more important things to do, or other important things to do. One who aspires to reach the culmination of yoga and has realized his self by rendering service unto me should never associate with an attractive woman, for such a woman is declared in the scripture to be the gateway to hell for the advancing devotee. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The culmination of yoga is full Krishna consciousness, not half-baked Krishna consciousness, please. Prabhupada is saying full Krishna consciousness. So we shouldn't flatter ourselves, is the point I'm trying to make, basically. That we're so Krishna conscious that we don't need to, take heed of some of these instructions. These instructions were meant for us. Srila Prabhupada has given these instructions for us. And to the extent we're able to see their practical application in our own lives, even ever so slightly as it may be needed, then to that extent we'll be able to practically claim to be followers of Srila Prabhupada. The culmination of yoga is full Krishna consciousness. This is affirmed in Bhagavad Gita. A person who is always thinking of Krishna in devotion is the topmost of all yogis. And in the second chapter of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is also stated that when one becomes free from material contamination by rendering devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he can at that time understand the science of God. Here the word prati labdhatma labha occurs. Atma means self and labha means gain. Generally, conditioned souls have lost their atma or self, but those who are transcendentalist have realized the self. It is directed that such a self-realized soul who aspires to the topmost platform of yogic perfection should not associate with a young woman. In the modern age, however, there are so many rascals who recommend that while one has genitals, he should enjoy woman as much as he likes, and at the same time, he can become a yogi. In no standard yoga system is the association of woman accepted. It is clearly stated here that the association of women is the gateway to hellish life. The association of woman is very much restricted in the Vedic culture. Out of the four social divisions, the brahmacharya, vanaprastha, and sannyasi, three orders are strictly prohibited from the association of women. Only the grihasthas or householders are given license to have an intimate relationship with a woman, and that relationship is also restricted for begetting nice children. If, however, this is Prabhupada's humor coming out now, if, however, one wants to stick to continued existence in the material world, he may indulge and female association unrestrictedly. You have my blessings. text number 40. The woman created by the Lord is the representation of Maya. And one who associates with such Maya by accepting services must certainly know that this is the way of death, just like a blind well covered with grass. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes it happens that a rejected well is covered by grass, and an unwary traveler who does not know of the existence of the well falls down and his death is assured. Similarly, association with a woman begins when one accepts services from her, because woman is especially created by the Lord to give service to a man. By accepting her service, a man is entrapped. It should be interjected here that Srila Prabhupada sometimes he instructed by practical example. I remember one time Pragosh was distributing books in an airport. I think it was in L.A. And there was one lady coming through the door with, you know, too much luggage, and she was having difficulty. So Prabhupada instructed Pragosh to open the door for her. And then he told to Pragosh that a Vaishnava is a perfect gentleman, like that. So, mind you, that it's very important, the instruction here is that a man, especially the brahmachari, the vanaprastha, and the sannyasi, should not accept services from the woman. But although intelligently, you know, one has to understand time and circumstance and to what extent, such restriction in the matter of giving service. Accepting service is one thing, giving service is another thing. If he is not intelligent enough to know that she is the gateway to hellish life, he may indulge in her association very liberally. This is restricted for those who aspire to ascend to the transcendental platform. And it might be also added, if you don't mind my interjecting something in Prabhupada's purport here, a little explanatory note, that this, for those who aspire to ascend to the transcendental platform also includes grihasthas. In other words, it's not the business of the grihastha thinking that he has license for restricted sense gratification, that he can unrestrictedly engage in his so-called restricted sense gratification. So if someone is actually aspiring to ascend to the transcendental platform, then in all respects, it is essential to understand that the association, the idea of a man associating with a woman is simply the perverted reflection of the original idea of Krishna associating with the gopis. Or the reflection of the Parakya Ras, and in marital life, the reflection of the Swakya Ras, Krishna's associating with his queens. So it is not, let's say, in keeping with the original Seva Bhavana of the soul, who is Prakriti, not Purush. Even 50 years ago, in Hindu society, such association was restricted. A wife could not see her husband during the daytime. Householders even had different residential quarters. This is Prabhupada's exposition on the actual standards of Vedic life. The internal quarters of a residential house were for the woman, and the external quarters were for the man. Acceptance of service rendered by a woman may appear very pleasing, But one should be very cautious in accepting such service, because it is clearly said that woman is the gateway to death or forgetfulness of one's self-interest. She blocks the path of spiritual realization. Text number 41. Now this is a very interesting text and purport. A living entity who, as a result of attachment, we already read part of this verse, but we'll do it again. A living entity who, as a result of attachment to a woman in his previous life, has been endowed with the form of a woman, foolishly looks upon Maya in the form of a man, her husband, as the bestower of wealth, progeny, house, and other material assets. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. I didn't hear many jais on that one. Let's try again. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. I know this is a very sensitive issue, but we're going to speak on it anyway, because it's important, you know, subject matter to discuss in the assembly of Vaishnavas and Vaishnavis. From this verse, it appears that a woman is also supposed to have been a man in her previous life, and due to his attachment to his wife, he now has the body of a woman. Wah, wah, wah. Anyway, all is not lost. Just don't wish it on me. You know, I don't want to have a female form until I can have the Gopi Deha. So, you know, please bless me that I'll never again fall into the trap of thinking myself to be the exploiter of the form of the woman, which is actually the reflected form of Srimati Radharani. Just like Shankachuda, just like Ravana, just like these, you know, nasty representations that we see, who are trying to compete with Krishna. You know, so we should also remember that that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by his shining example, how much he was, let's say, keen on, let's say, restricting his female disciples' approach to him. And it's important to understand this also a little soberly, if you don't mind. I think I'll just diverge to a little discussion about the actual purpose of sannyas. The sannyas order, you may be knowing that the sannyasi is given what we call as the sannyas mantra, or sometimes it's called as the Gopi Bhava mantra. Gopi Bhava Shrayaya Swaha is part of the mantra. I'm not repeating the whole mantra because I don't see myself as fit to initiate all of you into the mantra. But, and nor are all of you fit to be initiated into the mantra. But anyway, this sannyas mantra, Gopi Bhavashraya Swaha. So this indicates that one should take full shelter at the lotus feet of he who is the shelter of the gopi's bhava, or the gopi's mood of loving service. In some ways, this mantra can refer to Krishna. And in some ways, we can see how this mantra can refer to Lord Chaitanya. Because Lord Chaitanya, because as we, you will know that, you should know that in the dealing of Radha and Krishna Tattva, there's a distinction being drawn between the Vishaya and the Ashraya. There's the Vishaya Vigraha, who is Krishna, and there's the Ashraya Vigraha, who is Radha, or any of her counterparts, who are the abode, Bhav Ashraya, of the Bhav. Bhav or Mahabhav, etc. Mahabhav Ashraya. So, Gopi Bhav Ashraya refers to, it can refer to Mahaprabhu, because he is the embodiment of that Ashraya Vigraha in the form of Radha, because he is the embodiment of Radha Bhav and also other gopis, bhavas. So, Mahaprabhu wanted to, let's say, progress to the fullest extent to the position of complete absorption in Prakriti Bhav as a devotee, in the mood of a devotee. Everyone is trying to become God. All the materialists, all the demons, they're all trying to, they're competing for supremacy. And this way they're showing their idea, they're expressing their desires to actually usurp the position of the supreme enjoyer, which is only rightfully attributed to Godhead or Krishna. So, because there's this, Prabhupada has made the asked the question that which is better, to be honey or to taste honey. So, Krishna's like honey, but Radharani and all the devotees who are expanded forms of Krishna's pleasure potency, including all the jivas as well, because in many places Prabhupada has told that the jiva is constitutionally part and parcel of the pleasure potency of Krishna. So, it should be seen that that as Krishna is the supreme male or the supreme enjoyer, and all devotees are to be enjoyed, so they are all manifestations of his prakriti. Radharani is mool prakriti. She is the original root of all expanded forms of prakriti which are meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. So Krishna is like honey, and the devotees are the tasters of that honey. And Chaitanya Charitamrita describes how a devotee like Radharani experiences 10 million times the happiness in her relating with Krishna than Krishna experiences in his relating with her. 10 million times. Of course, that's inconceivable. And not only that, but the devotees of Radharani, the sakis and the maidservants, they experience 10 million times the happiness of Radha by making the arrangements for Radharani to meet with Krishna than Radharani experiences in her relationship with Krishna. So 10 million times 10 million. How many zillion is that? You know? So how can we understand? But in any case, Krishna, as the supreme enjoyer, he feels a little bereft and left out in the matter of his actually accomplishing what he has set out to be, to accomplish as the supreme enjoyer, and that's enjoy supremely. So when he sees that his devotees are enjoying so much more than he's enjoying, then he's tempted or prompted by that vision to try to adopt the vantage point of a devotee in order to gain access to that experience of the devotee's tasting of honey. So Krishna no longer wants to be the honey that's tasted, but he wants to be the taster of the honey of Krishna in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So just like in his association with Vishnu Priya, in his married life, there were times when he had to, let's say, take the position as the Purusha. You know, Mahaprabhu is also Purusha. He's the Kali Yuga Jagya Purusha for this age of Kali. He's the enjoyer of the sacrifices of the living entities, etc. So he takes the position as Purusha in one way. But he doesn't want to, let's say, he wants to experience this Prakriti Bhav, the mood of being enjoyed and the happiness, and he wants to taste the happiness of being enjoyed by Krishna. And by tasting that happiness, experience 10 million times the happiness, or 10 billion zillion times the happiness that he would ordinarily get to experience. So in this way, Mahaprabhu wanted to separate himself from any situation as far as possible. He wanted to separate himself from any condition which would cause him to again revert to his Purusha Bhav, or the mood of an enjoyer. Even it's described by many Vaishnava charges, Narahari Sarakar, and also Lochan Das Thakur. In their books, there's elaborate description about Mahaprabhu's conjugal affairs with Vishnu Priya Devi, etc. So we may see that at certain instances Mahaprabhu did again see his mother, but he never ever again saw his wife. And there's very good reason for that. And also, he never allowed his female disciples to come closer than 50 feet. You can imagine, you know. 50 feet is like from here to maybe the Tulsi Stump, you know, to offer obeisances. And he was setting an example. It may not be possible for us to follow that example here in this day and age. We hardly get 5 inches, you know, at the Mangalartik. You know, what to speak of 50 feet. But if you think about it, Mahaprabhu was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was completely in control of his senses. Let's say he's the master of Maya. He never comes under the influence of Maya. Yet, he was, let's say, keeping himself 50 foot distance from any, let's say, situation which might provoke him to, let's again, adopt that Purusha Abhiman. So he's setting the shining example for the sannyasis. I personally feel that the sannyasis in this movement would do well to review and again review Mahaprabhu's example, perhaps there would be less casualty rate, you know, if they would do so. Understanding why, the purpose, we see that practically in every case of every sannyasi, almost every sannyasi who's fallen down, it's been due to, let's say, an inordinate proximity with the female section of clan of disciples or whatever it may have been. Due to improper intimacy with the opposite sex, then what happens is that he loses his standing. Mahaprabhu was the master of Maya, perfectly in control of his senses, keeping himself 50 feet, or keeping the ladies 50 feet from him, in order to save himself, to give himself a greater facility for entering into the relishment of this Prakriti Bhav. He's showing how the sannyasi can become freed from the attachment to the false Purusha Abhiman, which binds one. It is not woman who's binding. It is not men who is binding the woman. But it's the misconception of ourselves as being the enjoyer or the exploiter of these forms that is within ourselves. That is the contamination. Yet, Vedic culture, in consideration of the contamination or the possibility of that contamination again arising in the heart, makes clear separation between men and women. As a matter of fact, Narada Muni, he describes in one sloka, he describes that people who do not understand the necessity to keep separation between men and women are no better than animals. So there's great necessity for understanding the purpose behind all this. We are all contaminated by this Purusha Abhiman, whether we're in the body of man or in the body of woman. Sometimes it is said that in so many places, Prabhupada has mentioned, and it is also coming from Shastra, Chanakya Pandit also has mentioned, that women are 9 times lustier, 10 times egocentric, 7 times, audacious, twice as gluttonous, etc., voracious. Like this, I can't remember the sloka, but I wanted to pull it out of the hat today just for fun. But it mentions like this, and sometimes, or else, just like we were reading, how, you know, a coarse fool, a man who becomes the dancing dog in the hands of a woman, it may be seen many times how, like in Prahlad Shiksha, these fools and rascals who are, you know, simply engaged in chewing the chewed, you know, men who are like hogs, dogs, camels and asses, you know. So sometimes people, it becomes like, you know, whoa, wait a minute, you know, are you talking about me? You're not talking about me, are you? You know, so it's kind of like that sometimes. You know, devotees become defensive. There's a tendency to become defensive. But if we understand, you know, that we're trying to become cured of a disease, and that more or less everyone that has a material body, unless he's a Nitya Siddha avatar coming, or she's a Nitya Siddha avatar coming from the spiritual world, you know, unless we've attained Vastu Siddhi. Vastu Siddhi means when we will have actuated the Satchitananda Siddha Deha with which to play with Krishna and dance with Krishna in his leelas. Even if we're on the platform of Sarup Siddhi at the stage of Bhava Bhakti or Prema Bhakti, the lower stage of Prema Bhakti, in the Sadak Deha, there's every chance, there's slim chances, let's say, of again becoming overwhelmed. Just like it's described, Srila Prabhupada describes, that Bilvamangal Thakur, in his previous lifetime, was on the platform of Bhava. But he fell down, so much so that he became addicted to the association of a prostitute, Chintamani. You know, so the sannyas order particularly, and not just the sannyas order, because our business is not just to, because sannyas is not a change of dress. Sannyas is a change of consciousness. Everyone, whether in this body, that, or the other, it doesn't matter. Everyone should immediately take to the sannyas order of life and embrace the dress of sannyasi or sannyasini in the heart. And understand that our conditional life, whether it's nine times lustier or one times lustier, you know, it doesn't matter, really. The principle is the same. We should understand that these instructions from the acharyas, from the shastras, woman is nine times lustier. Okay, all right. So then, what are we supposed to do? You know, we should be thinking that this is a great mercy. This is not a kind of chauvinism. It is not. It's not that this is wrong. This means that someone has misunderstood the instructions of the spiritual master if they perceive that these types of statements are a kind of chauvinism. It's not chauvinism at all. We don't hate any particular section of society. We hate everyone equally. You know, so we're not. We don't hate. But the hating of anyone doesn't mean that we're hating you. It means that the doctor is hating the disease. You understand? The doctor doesn't hate the patient. The doctor hates the disease. And as such, he's doing his level best to root out that disease. So when we hear statements like, women are nine times lustier, or this is actually a manifestation of the mercy of the acharya upon the woman. Because they need more mercy. Try to understand. The chastisement of the spiritual master is misunderstood by the neophytes. But when the chastisement is taken rightly by an advancing devotee, then it becomes the foothold or the cause of his progress to the perfectional stage. So, everyone needs mercy, no doubt. Everyone has to become freed from the false Purusha Abhiman. It just so happens that various bodily, constitutions, they foster varying degrees of lust, anger, envy, kam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, matsarya, etc. Just like the body of a tiger, everyone is spirit soul. The body of a tiger is not spirit soul, but the entity within the body of a tiger is spirit soul. If we were to view everyone equally, then why do we discriminate? Why is it that we disallow the monkeys and the dogs to come from Mangalartik, for example? You know, why the woman should stand up front for the Mangalartik? Why not put all the monkeys and the dogs and the tigers up front for Mangalartik? We can bring them all up for Mangalartik, because after all, they're all spirit soul. How do you know they don't want to see Krishna? You know, especially they're in Vrindavan. So anyway, without belaboring the issue, but we should understand, at least it's my endeavor is to try to help shed a little light on this subject matter, so as to perhaps lend to the healing of wounds, not to reopen wounds, but to bring some sanity to the order, that with all humility, we have to accept the instructions of the acharyas and accept the instructions of the shastras, not as a challenge superficially, that, oh, he's challenging my position, you know. You know, we're also devotees. You know, first of all, we shouldn't be thinking that we're devotees. We should be praying and aspiring that one day we can become devotees. You know, we're as good as the men. You know, this is a great blunder in the logic. We should be thinking, and the woman and the men shouldn't be thinking we're better than the woman and all these things. But we should be thinking that we're very low, and we need all the mercy we can get. That if it's being pointed out in Shastra that the women are 9 times lustier, etc., then we should take it that this is our lookout, that we have to be 9 times more careful about our progress in devotional service. We have to work harder, you know, at overcoming. We have to, let's say, work harder at taking shelter of Krishna. And we have to also work harder, you know, at seeing how our interrelationships with other members of society do not cause, perhaps, let's say, a disruption in the social order, for the, you know, in consideration of the progress of all the members of society. This will be the sign of our broad-mindedness. This will be the sign of our spiritual intelligence, you see. And it will be our saving grace, that if we have to work harder, just like, you know, striyo vaishas tata shudras, you know, sudras, what to speak of chandalas, what to speak of malechas like me, you know. We're brought up in such a low grade, you know, condition of life. And it's very easy for us to again revert to the asura bhavam. You know, we can very easily, let's say, turn our face from Krishna and again go in the direction of the maya mrigas of this world. You know, so, and we've seen, how is it that 90% of the disciples of Srila Prabhupada have fallen away from active engagement and devotional service in relationship to Srila Prabhupada's mission? How is it, if it's not possible for people to trip up in the course of their devotional progress? Prabhupada is told that we cannot blame anyone except ourselves for our lack of advancement in devotional service. That means that we cannot blame anyone except for ourselves for our inability to overcome the influence of Krishna's maya by taking shelter of Krishna. To the extent that we're able to take shelter of Krishna, these statements are meant to, let's say, push us in the direction. Yes, you're 9 times lustier, 9 times, you know, 10 times more egocentric. So be aware, be careful. It's just like astrology. You don't go to an astrologer to find out how the planetary systems are influencing your life adversely so that you can surrender to the adverse conditions. You know, just we go to the astrologer so we can find out that, you know, 2 years later, you know, I'm gonna trip and fall and bang my nose. No, you go to the astrologer, you know, so that you don't go to the astrologer to find out that I'm gonna bang my nose, so therefore I have to live out the course of my destiny and go bang my nose. You know, 2 years down the line. It's supposed to happen, it's, you know, it's right on time, it's time to bang my nose, okay, let me fall down now and bang my nose. Because it says in astrology that there's chances for these things to happen. But we go to an astrologer, if we go to an astrologer, if we must, there's no real need, but if you do go to an astrologer, you go to an astrologer to find out how to avoid the possible pitfalls. It's just like on a battlefield, because we're fighting a war against Maya, so there are many mines planted on the battlefield, landmines, so to speak. So these landmines, you may not know, just like Prabhupada was describing the dark well.
you know, which is covered by grass. You cannot see. But if by the mercy of the acharyas, these landmines are pointed out that we can understand the strategy of Maya, then it may be very much easier for us to avoid, you know, the problems in the progress of our spiritual life. So this is mercy. We should understand that this is mercy. It is not the instructions are not meant to put anyone down. The instructions are meant to help us to overcome the possible problems that may arise by inducing us that, oh, I'm so fallen. This is what we should be thinking. Yeah, okay. So, if we can realize that we're in a fallen condition, then it's easier for us to realize that it's need, that there's a great need for us to take shelter. We are petite. There isn't anyone in Kali Yuga, basically, who isn't petite. So we have to take shelter of petite paman, who can purify us from our petite by a process which will, let's say, practically effect that purification. And that process has been given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Harinam Sankirtan is the main process given in this age of Kali. So, I don't know, it's already 10 o'clock. Here we go again. I wanted to read this purport though. I got a little sidetracked, excuse me. From this verse, it appears that a woman is also supposed to have been a man in her previous life, and due to his attachment to his wife, he now has the body of a woman. Bhagavad Gita confirms this. A man gets his next life's birth according to what he thinks of at the time of death. If someone is too attached to his wife, naturally he thinks of his wife at the time of death, and in his next life he takes the body of a woman. Similarly, if a woman thinks of her husband at the time of death, she naturally gets the body of a man in her next life. In the Hindu scriptures, therefore, woman's chastity and devotion to the man is greatly emphasized. A woman's attachment to her husband may elevate her to the body of a man in her next life, but a man's attachment to a woman will degrade him, and in his next life he will get the body of a woman. We should always remember, as it is stated in Bhagavad Gita, that both the gross and subtle material bodies are dresses. They are the shirt and coat of the living entity. To be either a woman or a man only involves one's bodily dress. The soul is in nature is actually the marginal energy of the Supreme Lord. Every living entity being classified as energy is supposed to be originally a woman or one who is enjoyed. In the body of a man, there is a greater opportunity to get out of the clutches, get out of the material clutches. I'm not saying it, Prabhupada's saying it, excuse me. In the body of a man, there's a greater opportunity to get out of the material clutches. There is less opportunity in the body of a woman. In this verse, it is indicated that the body of a man should not be misused through forming an attachment to woman and thus becoming too entangled in material enjoyment, which will result in getting the body of a woman in the next life. A woman is generally fond of household prosperity, ornaments, furniture, and dresses. She is satisfied when the husband supplies all these things sufficiently. The relationship between man and woman is very complicated, but the substance is that one who aspires to ascend to the transcendental stage of spiritual realization should be very careful in accepting the association of a woman. In the stage of Krishna consciousness, what are we calling the stage of Krishna consciousness? Huh? Well, he's saying in the stage, if we want to say in the process of Krishna consciousness, but the stage of Krishna consciousness means probably something that's a little beyond most of us. The stage of Krishna consciousness means full Krishna consciousness, as we previously discussed. In the stage of Krishna consciousness, however, such restriction of association may be slackened, because if a man and woman's attachment is not to each other, but to Krishna, then both of them are equally eligible to get out of the material entanglement and reach the abode of Krishna. As it is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, anyone who seriously takes to Krishna consciousness, whether in the lowest species of life, or a woman, or of a less intelligent class, or of the less intelligent classes, such as the mercantile or labor class, will go back home, back to Godhead, and reach the abode of Krishna. A man should not be attached to a woman, nor should a woman be attached to a man. Both man and woman should be attached to the service of the Lord. There is the possibility of liberation from material entanglement for both of them. Of course, we should understand that this is in reference to the Grihastha ashram. It is not that let's say the restriction of association may be slackened in the Brahmacharya ashram or Vanaprastha ashram or Sannyasa ashram. But because Bhakti Yoga is so powerful that even in the lowly Grihastha ashram, because it's so powerful, this is to extol the beauty and the power of Bhakti Yoga. Many times we see in Bhagavatam and in other shastras how it is that, for example, a sannyasi like Durvasa Muni, he was defeated by a lowly grihastha, Ambarish Maharaj. Why? Not because Ambarish Maharaj as a grihastha was more powerful. It's not that these statements are not to extol the glories of the Grihastha ashram, that in Bhagavat many were Grihasthas. No, but it's to extol the power of the process of bhakti, that bhakti has its power which can even help one to overcome various you can say fallen conditions of life. So if someone is having bhakti, doesn't matter whether he's a Grihastha or Brahmachari, Vanaprastha, Sannyas, or Paramahansa, or whatever, it doesn't matter. If he's Krishna consciousness, or it doesn't matter whether he's in the body of a man or in the body of a woman. If bhakti is there, then bhakti will overcome any impediment and help one to come to the liberated stage of relishing the eternal relationship with Krishna in a spiritual body. But if someone may be a so-called highly elevated sannyasi, because sannyasis are supposed to, it's never said that the grihasthas are the spiritual masters of the varnas and ashrams. It never says that the women are the spiritual masters of the varnas and ashrams. It says that the sannyasis are the spiritual masters of the varnas and ashrams. So someone may be regarded as a sannyasi, but if he's devoid of bhakti, then he's in a fallen condition. Whereas even a lowly sudra or a malechya or chandravala, yavana, or the lowly, you know, petite woman section of society, if they're invested with bhakti in the heart, then they're more glorious than let's say even the highest materially conceived section of society of sannyas, if that sannyas order is devoid of bhakti. However, in keeping with the varnashram system for proper social intercourse, still it should be especially in the society of devotees, if someone is let's say in the sannyas order, then he should be regarded properly by the other sections of society, you know, in order to facilitate his advancement for our benefit. So where are we? A woman, therefore, should consider, this is Kapila Muni again, a woman, therefore, should consider her husband, her house, and her children to be the arrangement of the external energy of the Lord for her death. just as the sweet singing of the hunter is death for the deer. And there's a nice purport here also. A small, not so big purport. In these instructions, Lord Kapiladev, it is explained that not only is woman the gateway to hell for man, but man is also the gateway to hell for woman. It is a question of attachment. A man becomes attached to a woman because of her services, her beauty, and many other assets. And like I say, if we're not in optimum Krishna consciousness, these psychological, or let's say this psychology may also be present in the minds of various classes of neophyte devotees. So we shouldn't just brush it aside as being impertinent to our discussion. A man becomes attached to a woman because of her service, her beauty, and many other assets. And similarly, a woman becomes attached to a man for his giving her a nice place to live, ornaments, dress, and children. It is a question of attachment for one another. As long as either is attached to the other for such material enjoyment, the woman is dangerous for the man, and the man is also dangerous for the woman. But if the attachment is transferred to Krishna, both of them become Krishna conscious, and then marriage is very nice. The big if. If the attachment is transferred to Krishna. So now we have to ask, to what extent are we allowing that to happen? You know, and to what degree are we actually advancing in Krishna consciousness? And to what degree are we still remaining attached to the material trappings on the plea of being a devotee? A man becomes, what is it? But if the attachment is transferred to Krishna, both of them become Krishna conscious.